As I said, my life was changed at 17 years old. I can take you back to that tabernacle when that preacher was preaching. Preaching on giving your life to God and not wasting your life. Very much like the message tonight. It was a youth-filled message. It was a message of getting your attention. The tragedy of wasted youth. The tragedy of wasted years. Because we only have youthful years for just a little bit. He preached that night out of James chapter 4. And I don't remember much about my friends that night. I don't remember much about other churches that night. We would come in together with other churches. There was probably 300 or 400 teenagers there that night under that big brush arbor. And I was sitting at about the fourth row on the left. And Brother Steve gave an invitation that night. And I don't remember who went to the altar. I don't remember much about the actual invitation. All I remember is that God got a hold of my heart. I remember I got out of my seat and I came forward to an altar. And I knelt down at that altar and I literally gave my life to Jesus. And I said, Lord, I don't know what you're doing with this life. I don't know what you want to do with this life. But Lord, I'm giving you my life. I had dreams of going into the Air Force. I had uncles that went to the Air Force. I had military family. And I had a dream of maybe serving the country and doing that and going to school and doing all. And God just shook all of that up and said, yes, I want you to go into the military, but not the United States Army. I want you to go into my army. And I served the Lord from 17 years old and enrolled in Bible college, went to Bible college, met my wife, and started out in the ministry serving the Lord. You know how long? It's been a long time. I graduated college in 2002, and since 2002, I've been serving in vocational ministry and youth pastorate and pastoring and all those things. You know how long that seems? It honestly seems just like yesterday. It seems like just a few years ago that I was sitting in a youth group, that I was sitting in a camp, that I was sitting on a row, passing notes to girls and doing all of that. And now here we are, all these years later, preaching to teenagers and getting to do this, the thing that I love. And it just seems like the roles were reversed just a few years ago, and it's been so long ago. Solomon looked back at his life and he says, remember now thy creator. The first thing that I want to call to your attention is the same thing that Solomon is calling to us to remember, a call to remember. We see that in verse number 1, remember now thy creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. There's several words that I want you to underline if you do that, or maybe write them down on the side. Write the word remember. Remember, what's it mean? It's not a casual recall. It's not something that you just casually remember. There's a lot of things in our lives that we casually remember. Someone may ask you this and you'll say, oh yeah, I vaguely remember that. But there'll be certain instances in your life where you say, oh, I remember every detail. I'll be honest with you, Saturday night, I'll never forget that night. I'll remember every detail of pulling my things out and lifting that garage door and all the windows blowing out. I'll remember the heat off of that. I'll remember what it felt like, sweat and seeing things going crazy. I'll remember. Why? Because it's not just a casual recall. It is a purposeful remembrance. It impacted your life. He says this, perk up, listen, intentionality, listen to this. Remember. When do we remember? We remember now. We're not going to remember tomorrow. We're not going to remember a week from now. We're not going to remember after camp. We're not going to remember when we get older. He says, remember now. What does now speak of? Now speaks of urgency. Remember now, every minute that passes, every minute that comes by, you'll never get it back. Here's another phrase, thy creator. Remember now, thy creator. Why does he say creator and not God or Father? Because you did not create you. You've been bought with a price. I go around the country and I ask teenagers all the time, especially seniors, what are you going to do with your life? And they give me a whole list of what they're going to do with their life, and God is nowhere to be found. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a dentist. There's nothing wrong with being a veterinarian. There's nothing wrong with being a nurse or an officer or whatever you want to be, some type of career. But understand, if God is not in your plans, it's vanity. Remember now thy creator. You're not your own. You're bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your what? Your body. It's not yours. Who do we think we are that we can tell God what we're going to do with his life? Who do we think we are that we say, God, it's my life. I'll do what I want. No, that's humanism. That's what you've been taught by the world. This is not our life to live. It's his life. Remember now thy creator in the days of thy youth. Vance Havner said this, the best thing a young person can do is give God the first hour of the day, the first day of the week, and the first years of his life. God deserves the first. I was preaching in Connecticut a few years ago, and we were coming over a bridge, and the preacher stopped and pulled over. It was an impressive bridge. River flowing below, and beautiful, really a beautiful part of northern Connecticut. And I remember getting out of the car, and he said, let me tell you a story about this bridge. He said, in early 80s, I believe it was, this bridge, we had a pretty heavy snowstorm, and there was lots of snow. And he said, all of a sudden, in the middle of that snowstorm, this bridge collapsed. He said there was actually cars going across it at the time. Those cars plummeted to their demise in the river. It was like in the middle of the night. You could barely see. It was a very, very tragic thing that happened on this very bridge about 40 years ago. He said, but let me tell you the rest of the story. He said there was an old man who was driving his car at a very slow rate of speed coming up on that bridge. He said he saw what happened. He felt unusual about approaching that bridge, so he pulled his car over. He puts his flashers on. He gets out of the car. He walks over to the edge of that bridge where it used to be, and he sees that that bridge is no longer there. He looks down, and he sees cars in the snowy water, and he sees the blinkers and the flashers on. He's like, oh no. And then he turns around and he sees headlights coming. And so he keeps walking toward the headlights, waving his hands. Slow down. Stop. The bridge is out. Cars going by him that would not listen. As he would hear them going over the edge, he said one man went completely around him and lowered his window and hollered at him, like he's trying to stop him. And that man just went on around him only to plummet to his death in that bridge, in that water that was probably 150 feet below. I really believe that's what Solomon is doing here in this text. Stop! Before you waste your life, before you throw it all away, young person, listen to me, stop! It's not worth it. Before you throw it all away, it's not worth it. It is a call to remember. Here's the second thing we see. It's found in the latter part of verse number one. It says, remember now thy creator in the days of thy youth. And then it has a phrase there, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. Solomon warns of difficult days ahead. The coming of difficult days. Now, before we read that text and we think, oh, evil days, sinful days. We do live in sinful days. We live in very sinful days today. Open transgression, open wickedness, open sin. We live in that, but that's not what Solomon's talking about, the evil day. He's actually referring to sorrow and limitation because of age. Here's what he says, young people. Evil days are coming. You're going to get older and you're going to be limited by what you can do with your life. Yep. The evil day is coming, and it's a dreadful day. They call it the golden years, but they're not so golden, right? I mean, people's like, oh yeah, the golden years, retirement years. But a lot of the older folks that I know, the older they get, the more they hurt, the less they can do. I listened to the older folks in our church, and they said, "Preacher, I wish I could do more for the Lord. My body won't let me." What are they saying? The evil day has come upon me. Here's the truth tonight. You're at youth camp. You can literally stay up all night. You can drink 14 Mountain Dews. You can drink 6 Snickers, and you can stay up all night, and you can do all those things, and then come to camp in the morning and still have energy and still be annoying and still do all those things and make all those sounds and do all that. And you know what? Your counselor needs to go to bed by 6 o'clock. Your counselor was tired on Monday. Your counselor woke up tired this morning. Why? Because something happens naturally to us. We cannot do what we used to do. I don't care if you juice every day and if you take vitamins and if you take supplements, the body is designed to get old. And Solomon warns us, teenager, listen, Solomon says the evil day is coming. He calls it evil day. So what's he saying? Don't wait until life is hard to try to find joy in God. Don't wait till life is hard in order to find joy in God. There was an older man in our church when I first took our church, Bible Baptist. He called me. I was there maybe a year. He called me and he said, "Preacher, would you stop by?" He was a shut-in, probably in his early 80s. Precious man. Called me, said, "Would you make just come by and encourage me?" And so I stopped by his house. He had a beautiful house. He had worked hard his whole life. His wife had passed probably 10 years before, lived by himself. Knocked on the door. He had a little speaker on the door, like a ring, and he said, "Come in. Just open the door. It's unlocked." I walked in. It's a dark house. He didn't have any lights on except a single lamp over by the very back room with a huge window pane. He had already sitting in his lounge chair. He had like a little table right here. It has Bible open, had a coffee mug, and he had a chair ready for me right here. He said, "Come in, preacher. I've been waiting on you." I stepped in and I sat down, and beautiful back pane. He had a pond in the back. It was a gorgeous, gorgeous morning. And I looked at him expecting to maybe just, you know, talk to him and laugh a little bit and cut up. But when I looked up at him, tears was running down his face. And I mean, we hadn't even talked really. We hadn't even spoke. I hadn't really even said good morning. I just said, "Henry, why'd you ask me to come by?" And he said, "Preacher, I'm staring out this back window. And I wanted to talk to you because I have regrets that I wasted a lot of my life serving myself. And I'm too old to do anything about it." I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to say to this faithful man, this man that loved Jesus. But even looking back at his life, he felt like he had lived for self. He had lived for things. He had been successful. He had built a beautiful home. He had everything a man would want in his 80s except peace. Young people, you can't take none of that stuff with you. Nothing wrong with having things, but a lot of times things have you. You serve in this society thinking that you're going to have just another chance to serve the Lord. But I want you to look at the consequences of delaying this. We see a call to remember. We see a coming of difficult days. Older years are coming. But then he describes it in a very poetic way, only Solomon could do. He uses some imagery that is fascinating. Look at verse number 2. He says this, "While the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain." He begins to describe the joys, the ups and downs of life and health. He describes things right there in verse 2 that would make us happy. The sun and the light and the moon and the stars, things that God created, not man. He then breaks down the health. Look at verse 3. "In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble and the strong men shall bow themselves and the grinders cease because they are few and those that look out the window be darkened." He describes the very limbs and the very parts of our body. He talks about the keepers. Do you see that in verse 3? The keepers of the house. What does that mean? He's talking about when our hands and our arms begin to shake. My grandfather, who passed away 3 or 4 years ago, had Parkinson's disease. And he would hold a coffee mug and it would shake. You've seen it before. The older he got, the worse it got. You've seen older folks have to lean on things and hold things because their feet and their legs are not sturdy and they've had to have help to get. Why? Because the keepers of the house are shaking, or their limbs are shaking. They tremble. And then it says, and the strong men shall bow themselves. What's he referring to? He's referring to your back. When you get older, your limbs shake and your back hurts. Can I get an amen? Oh, I wish I could come to that work day at the church, but my back. Only old people say that. The back begins to hurt. And you know what? One day you just wake up and your back hurts. And you're like, I'm officially old. You play a game of basketball. You're like, man, what happened? I don't know. I just woke up this morning and I can't straighten up. You go to push start your car and you twist your wrist. You cough and you throw your back out. You're chewing bubble gum and you break your jaw. I don't know. I mean, things just start going south quick. He then describes something else in verse 3. He says, strong men shall bow themselves and the grinders cease. What's the grinders? Can anybody guess? The teeth. They cease. That means they're falling out. They're starting to get brittle. One day you're chewing something. You're like, oh, I believe that was part of my tooth. I mean, it just happens. Your body begins to break down. That's what Solomon says. He says, listen, the grinders are ceasing. Look at verse 4. He says in verse 4, the grinders cease. Look at verse 3. They're few. And those that look out the windows be darkened. What would that be? Your eyes. You now, maybe one day you had 20/20 vision and you're looking and all of a sudden things are a little blurry. Maybe some of the counselors are trying to read the words on the back and I see them doing this. Hey, guess what? Things are starting to get, you need to go to the eye doctor. You go to the eye doctor a lot of times, you have to get those eyes checked. Why? Because Solomon said the evil day is coming. Serve God while you have good eyes. Serve God while you have a good back. Serve God while your limbs are not shaken. Serve God while you have teeth. Serve God while you can do things. He's saying, listen, I wish that I had all those things so I could do it over and not have vanity in my life. He says in verse number 4, and the doors shall be shut in the street when the sound of the grinding is low. He's referring to your sleeping habit, little light sleepers, those that would be laying at night, the grinders are low, or your hearing. I'll be honest with you, it could be referring to we can't hear as good as we used to. He's then talking about, and he shall rise up at the voice of the bird. That things that we used to sleep, and now it little light things, we get up because we heard a little noise, and the daughters of music shall be brought low. Also, when they shall be afraid of that which is high, things that used to not bother them, they bother them, and fear shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish. What would that be? Your hair turns white. If you're fortunate to have hair. My beard turned white at like 25. It did. It just started growing white. I mean, one day I just got in the mirror and looked like Santa Claus. I'm like, this is great. No, this is really pastoring, but it really is. I took the church. I had a dark beard, and now it's white. But in all seriousness, hair starts turning gray and starts getting whiter. You're like, oh, I found a gray hair, found another one. He says, the almond tree shall flourish. And then he says in verse 5, and grasshoppers shall be a burden, or the light things shall be a burden to you. Things that used to not bother you, they bother you. Desires shall fail. Appetites, the ones that in your youth, you have appetites for things and desires for things. You don't have those desires anymore. They cease. He says in verse 6, or the silver cord be loosed and the golden bowl be broken. So even major things, I believe the golden bowl is referring to even brain, dementia, things that you could remember when you were young, you can no longer remember. You say, preacher, why are you covering these things? Because they're real. I mean, it's a reality. You may hear them in your youth and think nothing about them, but I can tell you on the authority of God's word, they are coming your way. And they'll be here sooner than you think. And then it says, and it's going all the way back to Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. It's appointed a man wants to die. After this, the judgment. We're going to return to the very dust that God formed us out of. Our spirit will go with the Lord. Our body will return to dust. We're all going to die. If the Lord tarries his coming, we're all going to have a funeral. We're all going to have, where people's going to have come to our funeral, and they're going to look at a casket and they're going to remember our life. He says, you're going to return back to the dust. Time flies. Solomon said, we're all going to have an appointment that we're going to make. We're all going to die. But then look at verse 8. Vanity of vanity, saith the preacher, all is vanity. The last point is this. We see the conclusion of the matter. He's starting to wrap up the final verses of his life is right here. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. It's all empty. He's recalling this, saith the preacher, all is vanity. He says this numerous times in the book of Ecclesiastes. What does he mean by that? He means that life without God is meaningless. Life without God has no meaning. Vanity of vanity, saith the preacher, all is empty. All is empty. He refers to some teaching in verse number 9. I'm hastening because I'm getting to the very last thing. Moreover, because the preacher was wise, be still taught the people. He still taught the people knowledge. Yea, he gave good heed and sought out and set in order many proverbs, referring to what Solomon did, the teaching aspect. The preacher sought to find our acceptable words, and that which was written was upright, even words of truth. The words of the wise are as goads, and the nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. And further, by these, my son, be admonished in making many books there is no end, and much study is weariness of the flesh. So Solomon is referring to some of the studies that he had done. Even, think about it, Solomon was the writer of Proverbs. I try to read a proverb every day. Solomon wrote many of those proverbs to his son. And by the way, Solomon wrote those things, but he did not practice those things. I've been preaching through in the Psalms on Sunday mornings, and I literally a few weeks ago preached Psalms 127. That was the Song of Solomon. It was a song dedicated to Solomon, attributed to Solomon. And here's what he said. Unless the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. He talked about raising up arrows in the mighty hand of God. And yet Solomon himself did not listen to his own advice. And here's what he says at the very end of his life, the last two verses. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Here it is, the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. The first thing he says to us in this conclusion is, fear God. Be in awe of God. Be in awe of his wonder. Be in awe of his joy. Be in awe of his goodness. Be in awe of his judgment. Fear God. And then he says something else. Follow God. Look at it, verse 14 or 13. Fear God and keep his commandments. How do we do that? We follow him. We follow what God says. We fear God. That's the first step. Teenagers, you're doing great. We fear God, and then look at me. We follow him. We follow what he says. We have a book here that tells us about God. I hear it all the time. The Bible is a roadmap. It's an instruction book. It's an instruction manual on how do you live your life. No, listen, I get that, and I agree with that for the most part. But you know what the Bible is? It's a book that tells us about God. And you know what we ought to do? We ought to read it because we learn more about God. And the more we learn about God, the more we fear God. And the more we fear God, the more we follow God. Why? Because one day we're going to face God. Look at verse 14. Fear, for God shall bring every work into judgment. Every work into judgment. So one day, listen, young person, we fear God, we follow His commandments because He says, Solomon says, there's going to be a day of a reckoning and we're going to stand before God and we're going to give an account of every work. And that's when we will say, Lord, I'm sorry for a wasted life. I'm sorry that I did not fear you the way that I should. I'm sorry that I did not follow you the way that I should. And Lord, I'm sorry because I'm standing before you empty-handed. Let me say something to the Emmanuel Baptist Church. There's a lot of things given to this church that's not given to a lot of churches. You're going to answer to God for this week. You're going to answer to God for the investment. Look at me. You're going to answer to God for the investment that these adults has put into your life this week. Because there's thousands of churches across this nation that don't have a week like this week. There's thousands of churches across this nation that wish they had this week. That wish they had a preacher that would get in front of them and worship the Lord and pour into them and preach his heart out. And so he puts into you Bible messages. And guess what you're supposed to do with them? You're supposed to take them to heart and put them to practice. And when you don't, you will stand before God for what has been given to you and you did nothing with it. It would be better for you not to be here this week. It would be better for you to not come to camp and not hear the messages and stand before God and not give an account for what you heard. Because now you're here and you've heard the messages and you do nothing with them. You're going to be like Solomon at the end of your life and say, all is vanity. All the cars that I work for, all the pay raises, all of the houses, it did not do one thing for me spiritually. And what does the world tell us? The opposite of that. Get ahead, do what you can, jump over people, live for yourself. And Jesus tells us the opposite. And then he says, for God shall bring every work into judgment and every secret thing. Boy, that just makes me tremble, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Young people are going to stand before God one day, and I think it's going to be sooner than we think. I mean, as you're at camp this week, the world is on fire. We are it's like a pressure cooker. And I'm telling you what, the pressure is just building in that pot, and this world's about to blow up. I mean, hatred and bombs and nuclear bomb wars and all the things that they're speaking of. And here in America, we're just like, yeah, let's have a party. Everything's good. The Christian church sleeps. We're not fearful. We're not trying to tell others about Jesus. We're not gospel-centered. We're just self, and we're just all about us and being influencers and being this and that while the world is on fire. And I don't want to be a Solomon at the end of my life looking back saying, man, I should have done more for God. I should have done more for God. I'll end with this. I was preaching a youth conference years ago before I ever pastored in Columbia, South Carolina. It was a large youth conference, 400 or 500 teenagers. I had the opportunity to deliver the last message on the last evening before everybody went home. I preached a message. I don't even remember the text, but I remember the invitation. The message was this. It's a lot of the messages that I preach to young people. Serve God. Give God your life. Either get saved or surrender. I mean, that's what we need young people to do. Get saved or surrender. I'll never forget, I said this, and it's unusual because I never really do this, but I remember coming down to the front, and I said, listen, for every teenager that comes to the front tonight that will surrender their life, you say, God, I'll do whatever you want me to do. I'll stand right here, and I'll pray with every one of you. If we're here till 12 o'clock, I'll pray with every one of you tonight if you come, because it's such a serious matter. That night, the invitation was given, and there was teenagers lined up. I was so pumped up. Man, there was teens lined up saying, hey, I'll give God whatever. I want to surrender my life. And I was encouraged. I was praying with them. And then the next one would come. I'd pray with them. The next one would come. We were just filing down. Young lady comes up to me, 14 years old. She stands there. I'm going to pray with her. And I said, honey, what's your name? She told me her name. And she said, but I want to give you something before you pray. I said, what's that? She handed me a piece of paper, folded up. I said, okay. And so I thought in my mind, this piece of paper was her testimony or maybe a letter. You know, often you get that at camp or they write a testimony or a letter. I opened up this letter or this piece of paper and it was empty. There was nothing on it except at the bottom of the paper, she signed her name. And I looked at her and I said, what is this? And she said, this is what I'm giving God. I've already signed the bottom of my life. He can fill in the blank. I've never seen a more powerful example of what God wants with our life. For us to say, Lord, here it is. You fill in the blank. It's your life. You know what that girl was saying? Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth.